You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We've got a great show for you today. We got the heavyweights joining us on the program. Mark Lawrence, playbook.com. Mark Lawrence gave us the eight elements needed to win the NCAA championship. And we've got a couple of teams alive that have these elements. We break it down with Mark Lawrence. And Mark's database and playbook goes so deep that he will be able to help us navigate our way through this St. Peter's and Furman game. And you guys know me, man. I've given you picks for a lot of like D-gen college basketball games over the years. We didn't take Furman at all this year. I didn't bet on or against Furman. Didn't touch Furman. And, you know, it's funny. I used to bet a lot of St. Peter's games, but I don't think I played one St. Peter's game this year. You know you're reaching when you're betting on these games when you look at, like, the ATS history, and their games weren't lined. Like, really, like, high school games have lines nowadays. Like, every game has a point spread. But these teams, you know, no, it's so low tier. No, they weren't all lined all the games. But Mark Lawrence will join us. Dave Malinsky joins us as well, the professor. I look forward to talking some college basketball with Dave Malinsky as we wind down the college basketball season. Of course, baseball starts this weekend, so next week we'll be in baseball mode. We're in hockey mode today as well. Chris Meaney is going to step up and join us. So we got four games in the National Hockey League tonight. We are talking about heavyweights. We got the Chicago Blackhawks and the Pittsburgh Penguins, a potential Stanley Cup matchup. Blackhawks have lost a couple. The Pens come in struggling as well. Interesting tilt this evening. We break it down with Chris Meaney. We'll see if Chris Meaney has any DFS plays for us as far as the National Hockey League is concerned. So I'd like to pull a Krusty the Clown right now. No monologue. Roll the tape. But we got no tape to roll, so I guess I got to do a monologue, right? Yesterday I told you about the Raiders. We talked about the Raiders. The NFL made it official. The Raiders going to Vegas, but is it official? Yeah, I guess it's official. And yesterday I also told you how I think like Raider Nation should just throw batteries on the field repeatedly and cheer for the visiting team. But they love their Raiders. They love the silver and black. So they're in a tough spot. But the reaction in Oakland has been so over the top negative about this that the NFL is concerned right now. And Mark Davis is concerned that, you know what, this, how are we going to play here? And now we find out that the stadium in Vegas, 3 years, not two, three. It's a long freaking time, 3 years, man. A lot of things can happen. Like, I believe, yeah, they're going to go to Vegas, but it's going to be a bumpy ride along the way. Now, crazy thing about this is we have teams leave and, you know, you have teams playing in different stadiums and stuff like that. This stuff has happened before. San Diego Chargers, good example. They're playing in a 30,000 seat stadium. But what's different about this is, you know, the Chargers aren't Super Bowl contenders. The Raiders are Super Bowl contenders. You know, the Raiders legitimately, like, if Carr didn't get hurt, they might have been in the Super Bowl last year. And they've had a great offseason. They're a solid football team. But this thing's a mess right now. Now, they play in Oakland. People are going to love them, and they're going to think, you know what, 3 years is a long time. A lot of things can happen between now and then. But I don't know if the NFL wants to go through this. So now there's talk about the Raiders moving to San Antonio before they move to Vegas. And it's funny because, you know, the NFL used to always use, like, L.A. Anytime there was a problem in a city, oh, we'll move to L.A. Well, you already got two teams in L.A., all right? Well, you got to put a third freaking team here now. So now you'll see San Antonio. San Antonio will become the new L.A. Every time a team has a problem and every time a team is trying to shake down a state for money, they'll just threaten to move to San Antonio. And it's funny because the New Orleans Saints, they were going to move to San Antonio. Remember after Hurricane Katrina? Kyle Turley, my boy, was on the Saints. You know, I got inside stuff about that. Tom Benson told them, we're out of here. This is our chance to leave New Orleans. And he said, sell your houses, start looking for a place in San Antonio, because we're going to San Antonio and we're not coming back. And the NFL actually shut it down and said, no, you're not moving to San Antonio after Hurricane Katrina. You got to stay. You got to stay in New Orleans. So San Antonio, that's the new L.A., so to speak. And San Antonio Antonio would be a good spot for an NFL football team. It just sucks that it happens to be the Raiders. So this thing is unraveling right now. Good for Las Vegas, bad for the Raiders players. They're Super Bowl contenders. They're not going to have home field advantage. And now they're going to move to like San Antonio maybe, and then Vegas. Now they're saying maybe they're going to play where the 49ers play. Maybe they'll play where a Cal plays. Either way, it's a freaking mess. And it's another debacle under Roger Goodell's watch. Like, seriously. Like, you know, Goodell, you're more concerned about deflated footballs than you are having a sound league. You look at other leagues, relocation. It's not a normal thing, man. It's not a normal thing. It's the Oakland Raiders. And you see what a freaking debacle it is right now. And the fun's just getting started. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are unfortunately live. The show's live. We are live. I'm somewhat alive. As full disclosure here, we had a little Fantasy Sports Network get-together last night. Little group get-together, and the damage has been done, all right? There's bodies, like, littered around the building today, except for our boy Cameron Thu-Drew. Because Cameron Thu-Drew, he's a good guy. He doesn't drink and drive and stuff. He's soft. I told him out. What do you mean you're not going to drink and drive? Just kidding, kids. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive. And Drew's a smart guy. Drew had a couple of drafts, and he went home. Some of us, you know, a little bit more hardcore, we went into the late night hours and paying a price right now. But, hey, whatever. It is what it is. And we got a great, we got some great guest stuff for you, though. Meany's going to join us. We got Dave Malinsky. We got Mark Lawrence. Mark was going to join us via Skype. Is it Skype or is he joining us on the phone? All right, so yeah, we got Mark right now. Mark Lawrence joins us. What's going on, Mark?
Doing terrific, Gabe. How you doing, bud?
Good stuff. You know what? I saw on the screen we had the Skype set up, but couldn't get it going in time for the segment here. Pretty close. I guess next week we'll break through, do some Skype.
That sounds great with me. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't want to. It's going to be rough for you because you're going to actually see me. And I had a late night last night,
shades,
Mark.
You know.
late night last night, so I'm feeling it today.
I gotcha.
So, you know, I've been talking a lot about your eight elements, and every year it's great stuff. Looking down what the teams need, and it's a weird Final Four in a sense. Only 657 people had it out of nearly 19 million people on ESPN.com. But at the same point in time, hey, we got 2-1 seeds in the Final Four, and you know, because of this history, Mark, I just don't really see how it's not going to be North Carolina and Gonzaga in the championship game.
It does look that way, Gabe, right now. You know, the difference being whether or not North Carolina has a letdown, if you will, after beating Kentucky. And the reason I mention that is teams in this tournament do just that. Teams that have knocked off Kentucky have let down miserably the game after that immediately. And it was a big revenge win for the Heels as well. So they better bring their A game because Oregon happens to be hitting on all cylinders right now.
So we mentioned, you know, last 19 years, 17 of the last 19 winners were either a 1 or a 2 seed, with the UConn Huskies winning twice as the exception there. But we have three coaches making their Final Four debuts, Mark, but three veteran coaches, guys that have been around. Mark Few meets the pre-requirement of 6 tournaments, Elite Eight appearance. Dana Altman, same thing. Frank Martin, I looked it up. Frank Martin had never been to the Elite Eight, though. This is as far as Frank's ever gone before.
Yeah, he's taken Kansas State pretty deep into this tournament, but this is new territory for him as well. And you mentioned those 654 people that have been made teams to the Final Four. I got to guess that 600 of them have to be from the state of South Carolina.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said they're stone students, Mark. You know what I mean? They're smoking a bong. Like, and even then, like, really, how many like basketball fans that go to South Carolina really took the game, Cox? Even I like to know, like, what mode? I like to interview some of these people, like, how that, like, you know, you watch every team, you have numbers on every team. We saw these guys, Mark. They're 1-8 against the spread in the last 9. They were 3-6 straight up. They scored 53 points against Alabama in the SEC tournament. They lost. They scored 65 points in one half against Duke.
Yeah, it's, you know, every year there's a surprise team, somebody that raises the eyebrows. It's the Gamecocks this year. There's no question about that. You have to give them their due. You know, they've beaten who's been put in front of them to get this far. But I think it would be stunning. It's just absolutely stunning if they made it to the championship game.
Yeah, and it's, I guess I agree with you, too. It'd be stunning if they made it. It'd be crazy. But I think they can play with Gonzaga. They match up. But I wonder, Mark, with the time off and, you know, being, you know, making it to the Final Four, it's one thing. Like, if the games would have been like last night and it kept going, I think South Carolina might have been more dangerous. You got to believe it catches up to them eventually, that the moment becomes too big.
Yeah, for underdogs like this, seated where they are in this tournament here, I think I agree with you. I think that it perpetuates continuously, and if you get a break in the games as we have here right now, I think it end up being a detriment to South Carolina more than helping them.
Well, the line's gone up a little bit, and I saw with your coffee club, Mark, as far as earlier in the week, you had a little tidbit about South Carolina. These seeds to get this far, it's been a nice run, but this is where they hit the wall, doesn't it? The database says that the Gamecocks are in trouble, doesn't it?
It does. You're talking about number seven seeds or greater this stage of the tournament here don't do well in Final Four round games. And we've seen teams get here before. You know, they pull the surprise. They're the darling of the tournament, the Cinderella, if you will. But Cinderella seems a loser slipper at this stage of the tournament.
All right. So let's talk about the Ducks and the Heels here. And props to you, Mark. We talked before the tournament started. I asked you for one team that you had circled to win it all. And you said you like the Oregon Ducks. And it's funny, because I was on the Ducks, you know it. I was talking about the Ducks all year long. I loved them at 18-1, and then I jumped off the wagon when Chris Boucher got hurt like an idiot.
Well, I've been off the wagon quite a while now, Gabe, but in a different manner, I guess. But on the Ducks in this tournament, yes, I have been. I really love the fact that this team is a lot deeply experienced, and everybody knee-jerked to the Boucher loss. They're playing as best as they could possibly play right now, and this could be an opportune time for them right now against North Carolina. Nobody's really giving them a chance. Carolina looked awfully impressive in that win against Kentucky, the manner in which they came back after they had a big lead. Blew it away and then come back to win the basketball contest here. And I think the site's a little bit favorable to them as well, being in Arizona. Carolina's finally got to move out of the South, if you will, to a different venue in a sense, and I think they could all benefit the Ducks in this contest.
One thing about Carolina, though, they have experience, right? Motivated from losing in that championship game last year, and we saw the Clemson Tigers in football lose the championship game and get back there again. And I'm curious to see if it happens. Seems to be a pattern, Mark, in championship in all sports in the last couple of years. Either like rematches, repeats, curses being broken, teams that have never won before. It's been a very dynamic past couple of years with these championships. And so I got my eye on North Carolina here. You know, and when was the last time? I don't even can't remember off the top of my head, Mark, that a team, was it like Michigan that went back to back? Like, who's played in consecutive championship games?
Yeah, it's been so long, I draw a blank with you, Gabe.
Oh, Florida. Florida Gators.
Repeated. Okay.
But, yeah, off the top of my head, I can't think of a team that lost and it got back there. I remember Michigan with the Fab Five lost two times in a row.
Yeah, it's a rare occurrence. You know, what works for Carolina here, getting back to the championship game, is Roy Williams, that you mentioned. Not only is the team experienced, so too is he as a basketball head coach. He's been there and he's done that. And, you know, while I had Oregon making the Final Four, in my CBS.com bracket, I had North Carolina winning it, but I had them beating Duke. So, you know, we can't all be perfect about what it is. You know, we think the way this thing's going to unfold. But happy to see Oregon, happy to see North Carolina playing in this game.
All right. The total's 151 here, Mark. It'll be interesting to see, because as you stated, North Carolina leaving their comfort zone, but as well for both all these teams. And I'm glad that they played all these games in arenas, Mark. And it makes a big difference, man. So now they're going to be in a stadium. I wonder if it's going to affect the totals, nerves, and then, you know, the baskets, sight lines, and everything else in between. What do you think about the totals of both these games?
Well, we generally see that, Gabe. It's a great point you bring up, that these these Final Four type games that are played in arenas as opposed to basketball venues, it's difficult for the scoring to get up and over the total here. And I think the sight lines plays a big, big factor into that. That and maybe just perhaps the intimidation of being this far into the tournament. But I think the 151 looks like a big total here. I'm going to probably go under in this basketball game.
Yeah, you know what? I looked at when I did my bracket as well for the tiebreaker, right? You got to do total points for the championship game. And I remember like last year, I put like 147 or 149 or something. And in past years, I've gone high. And I'm like, man, it's never close. And I actually looked it up, Mark. It's crazy, man. National championship games, you know, a lot of 69, 65 type of games, you know. They're not track meets.
No, it's defense. You know, we know, Gabe, defense wins championships. It doesn't matter what sport it is, football, basketball, and the deeper you go, the better the defensive teams to come to the forefront here. And, you know, whether or not a team is known as a defensive juggernaut, the fact of the matter is their defense is probably unsung, and we're going to find the best defense that North Carolina has. We're going to find the best defense that all three of these teams have in this stage of the tournament.
All right, Mark, you know, I know that you have numbers for every team in college basketball. But, man, we're reaching tonight. And I said off the top of the show, like, I was looking at the Furman St. Peter's game. You know you're reaching when, like, teams didn't even have line games. And, like, you know, like high school basketball is line right now. But it's on the board. So let's jump in. A little CIT semifinal action here. Texas A&M Corpus Christi against Maryland Baltimore County, UMBC, Mark.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, I hit on this in my coffee club this morning here, is that you've got six teams that are playing tonight, these two specifically, that are left in the minor tournaments here. And if you asked anybody walking in your studio what conferences these teams come from, you could probably win every bar bet. You know, these are all obviously non-major conferences. Texas A&M, CC, Baltimore, Maryland County, very, very difficult here. Furman St. Peter's here. You're probably asking the wrong guy. Here. I don't want to allude to the fact that I think that I have a side to these basketball games. All I can do is go into the conference tourneys themselves and look at the history, and you know, note that the teams that get to these games here that did it, that were camped at home, generally have trouble doing that, moving from a venue in a sense to cut down the net. So I probably lean obviously to the dog in these both of these contests here in the CIT tourney.
You're leaning dog. It's funny, Mark. And I got really nice. What more can I tell people? I tell people, listen, Corpus Christi are actually hot. They're 8-2 straight up in their last 10. I'm just leaning home teams, Mark, I figure at this point in time. But not too much on either of these as far as information. We'll tell you, Furman, 14-6 to the over in their last 20. Furman likes to push the pace. St. Peter's want to slow it down, 7-1-2 to the under, actually. And it says that we got NIT up there. It's actually, this one's the CIT guys. CIT. But we got the CBI final. This one we know a little bit more about, obviously, Mark. Coastal Carolina and Wyoming. And I cashed a ticket with Coastal Carolina in the first game. And I know you wrote about it as well. Interesting, we have the series format. Home teams, very good now, 9-1 straight up in the first game because they know they need this game. I was hoping that it would set up for a shorter number tonight with Wyoming, but everyone's expecting Wyoming to get back in the win column tonight. I think they do, and I'm not even scared of the number. I think they win by double digits.
I couldn't disagree with you, Gabe. I think what works best for the Cowboys here is the altitude in this basketball game. You're taking Coastal Carolina, and Coastal is as close to sea level as you can get, up into the mountains in Wyoming here, and you can see this basketball team running out of gas late in the basketball game. I think Wyoming wins this game in forces a game three in this championship series.
Yeah, Wyoming's a really tough place to play. Like Merrill brought up, Coastal Carolina were 16-17 last week.
Exactly. A losing team at home. In fact, they were the home underdog in the basketball game. That's how little Vegas thought of them, but they did take care of business at home. Now they're on the road. I think they pay the price tonight.
All right. So, Mark, we got the Warriors and the Spurs on the board tonight in the National Basketball Association. Really rare to see the Warriors getting points, man. Like, how many times have been underdogs this year? Maybe once, twice? Like, I think once, actually.
Yeah, they haven't been dogged too many times. In fact, this will be, I believe, the third time that Golden State will be the underdog this year. But the reason they are is obviously, one, no Kevin Durant. Two, they played last night. And three, the San Antonio Spurs. So three good factors, the reasons why they certainly couldn't entertain bringing Golden State the favorite in this game. But I think what really works in the contest is the revenge factor for Golden State. I know they won last night, no rest coming in here, but they catch the Spurs in the right spot off that big win over the Cavaliers.
Yeah, it's hard to get in front of the Warriors right now. I made a mistake of doing it with the Rockets, actually, and paid the price. And yeah, they're just when they're clicking, they're impossible to beat. You know, you don't want to get in front of this. You're getting 4.5 points. Hard not to like it.
Yeah, hard not to like that, and the fact that you're talking about a team that looks like they could win this basketball game. The last 12 times that Golden State's played with double revenge in the same season, they've won and covered 10 of those last 12 matchups. That's the role they're in tonight. You don't see Golden State taking it on the chops three times in a row in the same season to the same team very often.
Mark Lawrence, playbook.com. You do some baseball, Mark? We got baseball around the corner. I know you cap baseball, but do you do playbook baseball numbers at all?
We do. I'm largely deeply engaged in pitchers, as I'm sure you are as well. So I'm right now, as we're speaking, I'm pouring over my spring training pitcher stats, getting ready for this baseball season.
I know. It's this Sunday, man. It's crazy. We talk so much basketball. You know, pretty much tomorrow, in my more personal time, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write down my future plays. I'm going to get everything in and sort of get dialed in for this, because hey, next week we'll be talking baseball, Mark.
Well, real quick before I let you go here, Gabe, I would have two totals I'd like you for season totals. Both the Indians and the Cubs under their big totals here. Cubs off the big first World Series win in 108 years. The Indians, you go back and you look at every time that they've won 90 games or more, they've never spelled 90 the following season here. So I'm going to look for a World Series letdown, Indians-Cubs under this season.
Under Cubs and under Indians season win totals, huh?
There we go.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Mark, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with me, huh?
Hey, my pleasure as always, Gabe. Have a great one. Be good. Bye-bye.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. Yeah, we're hoping to get Skype. We'll get Mark locked in on Skype next week. We got Dave Malinsky. It's great stuff. Lawrence and Malinsky. Back-to-back here. We got Chris Meaney coming up. So, yeah, Malinsky's going to join us a little bit later. But we got Lawrence and Malinsky on the same show. Great stuff. Chris Meaney joins us. We'll talk some NHL hockey. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. We are joined by Chris Meaney, who we spent a couple hours with last night out and about. Chris, you look like you're doing better than I am.
Yeah.
Actually, not really. You look pretty bad.
Thanks, bro. I feel okay, actually. I shut her down a little early. I get the Gatorade and the water indie the night before. I wake up the same way. I'm ready to rock. Let's talk some pucks, bud. Here we go. Four games on the ice.
Speaking of drinking, let's talk hockey. I don't know how these NHL players do it. They sweat it out. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They sweat it out. The NHL players drink and drink and drink. That's why they have the morning skate, right? Morning skate, sweat it out, and then they go back to the hotel room and die.
Well, we were in Nashville. I brought this up again. This is twice this week, the Nashville story. But when we were in Nashville, the Sabres were there, and Nando DeFino, he saw Evander Kane. It was Evander Kane behind the bar mixing drinks for everybody, and he's in Nashville. It's not like he's in Buffalo doing it. He's in Nashville getting it done. So, yeah, I mean, they're used to it.
All right, so I got a big game tonight, actually. Battle of heavyweights here. And what could potentially be a Stanley Cup preview and matchup with the Chicago Blackhawks and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Penguins minus 135. The total is 6 in this hockey game. And, of course, me and Chris was in earlier in the week. We talked about Blackhawks being in a bad mood after losing 7-0 to the Florida Panthers. And, yeah, it looked great when they were up 4-1.
Yeah.
And then they blow that lead.
I know. There's some talk in Chicago. A lot of the players just said, you know, they had a meeting yesterday and they were talking about how they were just too comfortable. And at times when you get too comfortable, you get in the situation. I mean, 3 weeks ago, Gabe, this team was like 10 points back in Minnesota, and now they're about 10 points up on them. So that just shows how good they've been. These two teams played about a month ago and it was 4-1 Chicago. I don't know which team is going to win. They're both phenomenal. I like the over. I like the over here.
You know,
Crawford,
six, huh?
Even though it's 6, I mean, just the way that both of these teams are scoring, the depth is right now thin in Pittsburgh. I mean, Connor Sheary expected to be back back tonight. They're still without Malkin. Matt Cullen, he's sidelined. He's sick. You got Hagelin, who is out of the lineup. You got Letang, who's out of the lineup. You got Daly. Some of these injuries are actually starting to catch up to the Penguins. They look
awful. Have lost three straight
on Sunday against Philadelphia. They got bullied. They got beat around. There's no depth. I mean, at one point you had Kunackle and Brian Rust playing with Sidney Crosby. I mean, who are those guys, right? So I think that there's going to be some goals scored in this game tonight. And if you look at Crawford, I mean, he's allowed at least four goals in three of his last five starts, Gabe. He's allowing a lot. I mean, not only did they give up seven against Florida, they give up five against Tampa. They gave up six to the Vancouver Canucks last week. So they're struggling, too, defensively.
We should note as well, the Chicago Blackhawks have beaten Pittsburgh five consecutive times.
Yeah, and Fleury's expected to go tonight. He was in that game on March 1st when they lost 4-1.
So Penguins are minus 135 favorites in this game, total is six. We got the Kings and the Flames. Well, it's interesting here. Like, if we would have told you, let's say, like, 2 months ago, if you just would have said one of these teams can clinch a playoff spot with winning tonight, and it's not the LA Kings.
Yeah,
Calgary Flames can they clinch a spot in the playoffs? They're going to the playoffs. Nail it down with a win tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, the division is within reach for them. It's unbelievable the run that they've been on. It was 10 of 11 games at home at the Saddle Dome. That obviously helped them. They were rolling. They're one of the weaker teams on the road, but here they are again at home. They played an LA team a couple weeks ago, a more desperate LA Kings team a couple weeks ago. The writing's on the wall for LA. They're done at the deadline. What we talked about this at the deadline.
What did they do?
This is a team that can't score. They grabbed a 40-year-old Jerome McGinley who has issues skating and scoring, and then they grabbed a backup in Ben Bishop. It's not going to help you score goals, so there's no secret here with LA. You just continue to ride the hot team in Calgary. This team is rolling right now. And last week, when I was on here earlier in the week, I said just hammer a Monahan and Goudreau and Michael Furlan, and that line combined for 8 points the other night in a game against Colorado. So I like that line a lot if you're playing DFS.
A lot of players that we gave actually the other day on the show did well. Marchessault scored. Andrew Ghetto
got two goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're rolling.
I should give an NHL daily line instead of NBA. I think it'd be better. we got the Caps and Cameron Tews, Drew's Avs. Caps, minus 260. Road favorites. Man, 260 is a huge number in hockey. If you follow hockey, it's very rare that you get this type of number. Like, you know, or minus like 270, minus 300. You just don't see it. And if you do see it, it's never on the road.
No.
Like, this is crazy. So what are you saying? If the Capitals are playing at home, what are they going to be? Minus 425? Yeah. Like, what's the number there? If they're minus 260 on the road.
Yeah, there's no value to pick them here tonight, but they're not going to lose this hockey game. I don't expect them to lose. I mean, Colorado's checked out. If you're playing DraftKings, you want to get a little bit cute. You want to play GPPs. Maybe you go away from the Backstrom Ovechkin line. They were phenomenal the other night. Maybe you want to go Williams and Kuznetsov. But if you're playing DFS, you have to target. And we'll get to the next game. You have to target. There's nobody in the NHL that has been shorthanded more in the second half than Colorado and Arizona. They both play tonight. They're both playing great teams. These teams that they're playing against have great power plays. Shattenkirk has been unbelievable, especially on the man advantage for them. So Washington's going to roll. I like the over.
Yeah. You know what? I did the public parlay earlier in the week. The easy parlay with the two favorites, and we cashed it. I was thinking about the same thing tonight, but I don't like, I think Washington wins. St. Louis are also hot, and I guess we should just pull the trigger on this parlay. Jake Allen, 7-0 in his career against the Coyotes. So if you're playing DraftKings and you're looking at a goalie, and it'll say Jake Allen could be your guy tonight.
Yeah, and this is the third time in a row where I've come on the show to tell you Jake Allen. Yeah. He just continues to play, Gabe, and he continues to roll. I mean, even if it's not Jake Allen tonight, Carter Hutton, I'm fine with him. It doesn't look like it's going to be Braden Holtby. You can go Philip Grubauer tonight. Don't get too cute. Play those goalies. Get the win. Spend up. And again, with piggybacking, I'm still on board with, like, Schmaltz playing on the top line with Taves. He had 2 points the other night. I mentioned Furland, 2 points the other night playing with these top guys. Crosby playing with Russ and Cheery. These guys are pretty cheap, too. It'll allow you to spend up on some of these superstars that you should get in your lineup. Look, Tarasenko's got 30 shots in the last six games. He's playing against Arizona, who has allowed the most dangerous scoring chances in the NHL. These guys are going to get their chances tonight, and I know it's chalk, but it's too good to pass up.
You know, the St. Louis Blues very hot right now. 10-1-1 in their last 12 games.
We passed Nashville tonight with a win.
Yeah. Since the coaching change. They made the coaching change. They're 17-7-1 since the coaching change.
Yeah, if you look around the NHL, some of these
coaching changes
has worked out. I mean, Montreal is like 12-6-2.
Yeah.
They're comfortable now in the Atlantic. Boston, I know, is struggling, but they've been better. They've been scoring more
goals. Boston got a shot in an arm. The Islanders Islanders got a shot in the arm. The Wild.
Absolutely. I mean, the Islanders coaching change with Dougie Waite may have saved Tavares from sticking around in the Islanders. I mean, it was a relationship he didn't have with Capiano, and now he's got a player's coach in Doug Waite who has played in the NHL and been successful, you know, a few years ago. So the coaching changes across the board have helped every team out.
No, I've always expected that Tavares will end up being a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Yeah, I don't know. They're going to be in a tough spot, Gabe. They're getting a lot of players to sign. You got to think
they
won't
have the money.
Think about Nylander and Matthews and Marner getting money. They have no.
Those guys are still young for a couple of years.
They're still young for a couple of years, but you got to think about the future here. Kadri and what are they going? I mean, Bozak and maybe JVR, the odd guys out of here. You save a little bit of dough with that, even though JVR is on a good contract. They need defensemen, Gabe. So
pretty crazy though. The Leafs going to the playoffs. The Flames in the playoffs, like
a lot of Canadian teams.
Yeah, last year no Canadian teams in the playoffs. All right, so Chris has been talking a lot of hockey with us. Of course, baseball set to begin right now. Time to jump in, man. I got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, I heard Lawrence. He's not in on the Indians. I love Cleveland this year.
Yeah, Mark likes season win totals. Cleveland under, Chicago under.
Yeah,
but they're both high numbers.
They are
really. Cleveland can still win that division, and necessarily, what's the win total? I think it's 93.5.
And the thing with Chicago's division, it's
or
a lot.
Is it 92.5?
It's a lot tougher. I mean, you get the Cubs in there, you get the Cardinals, and the Pirates. It's a little bit of a tougher division for Chicago, even though they had their way last year.
But
St. Louis and Pittsburgh are always there. I find the AL Central is pretty weak this year.
It is weak.
Kansas City's taken a step back.
I know.
Detroit has taken a bit of a step back, especially to start the season out of healthy Miguel Cabrera.
That's why I love Corey Kluber over 14.5 wins on the season. It's a low number, I think, because of the divisions, the games that he plays. All right, we got to get out of here, but yes or no, do the Cubs win the World Series again?
No.
You say no repeat. All right, we'll give our Major League Baseball futures later in the week. Dave Malinsky joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. The show replays. If you missed the first couple of segments, we had Mark Lawrence and Chris Meaney on the show. Great segments with both gentlemen. Show replays at 5:30 on television, 5 o'clock on Fantasy Sports Network radio. And, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to FantasySportsNetwork.com and get all the shows for $2.99 a month. Great deal. So let's bring in Dave Malinsky right now. You read his column for free over at pregame.com. That's even a better deal because it's free. And it's right on the front page, point blank. Dave Malinsky joins us. Dave, it's always a pleasure. How you doing?
You know, Gabe, I'm a little disillusioned today, and I feel sad that you're in Toronto, even though I love the gig you have up there, because if the Raiders are coming to Las Vegas, who would have epitomized a local Raider fan better than if you were still here?
Yeah, I wore a Raider jersey yesterday just in honor of the move, actually. And who knows, Dave? It's, 3-4 years down the road. Maybe I'll be back.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is there's a lot of euphoria here in the city now, but now two things are going to sink in. One is that it's still several years before they will be here. Two, gosh, did we make a bad deal?
Yeah.
$750 million in public financing.
Well, the tourists are going to pay for it, though, right?
That's the shell game. But when they try to project how the tourists are going to pay for it, because, again, room taxes here are already pretty outrageous. And, of course, you and any visitor that comes knows that.
Yeah, the resort fee.
You pay for your room, but then there's an automatic resort fee, $25 to $40, that you must pay. From a marketing standpoint, what they'll do is they'll charge you $100 for the room, $40 for the resort fee, instead of just charging you $140 for the room. Somehow they think that's more palatable. So we've already pushed the tax out pretty far. But here's the con part. They have projected that it's the additional tourists that will be coming because of the Raiders that will really help to pay for this. And the thought is, how many more people are going to come to Vegas because the Raiders are here? First, you're not going to come on a Sunday to watch the Raiders because there aren't going to be that many tickets left over for people to come in. And the rest of the year, it's a non-issue anyway. So the notion that they're selling to us is that it will increase people coming Ah, boy, that's a tough one.
You know, Dave, I brought it up off the top of the program as far as the mess that they're in right now. It's hard. And Oakland, very passionate fan base. They've been screwed around. They've supported the Raiders no matter what. At least the fans have. And, you know, the hardcores have. Yet it's going to get ugly. And there's been a really over-the-top reaction. And I'm surprised that Mark Davis is surprised. He's like, wow, I'm surprised. You know, he's surprised how negative the reaction is in Oakland. Yet they do have a lease in Oakland. They have a lease in Oakland until 2018. But the NFL's concerned right now. Now I see reports that they might try to go to San Antonio for 3 years. There's talk about playing in San Francisco, maybe playing at Cal Berkeley, where in Cal's football stadium. But Dave, the Raiders were a Super Bowl contender, and they are a Super Bowl contender. You know, I'm curious to see, do they lose a home field? I mean, they could be nomads for the next 3 years. Puts them in a weird spot for a team that's knocking on the door of potentially winning the AFC.
Yeah, because it has been a real loyal fan base, you know, in that market for them. Some of the most rabid fans you'd find anywhere. It's going to be tough. I mean, if you're a Raider season ticket holder for the last decade, are you going this year? Are you going next year? Or do you say, no, that's it. I'm not giving you any more of my money.
Yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. It's a fluid situation right now. I don't see how it's going to play out. But a lot of people have asked me that are unaware about, well, how come they don't play in where the UNLV Running Rebels play in Sam Boyd Stadium? And I tell them because Sam Boyd Stadium is, you know, for lack of a better word, a dump. And, like, secondly, like, there's high school stadiums in Texas that are nicer than Sam Boyd Stadium. It's one thing with the Chargers playing in a 30,000-seat stadium. That's an MLS stadium, Dave. They build beautiful, small stadiums, that league. Sam Boyd Stadium, you can't play an NFL game there. You can't do it. Like, you just can't do it.
Well, let's set a perspective for you. Every year we have the Las Vegas Bowl at Sam Boyd Stadium. The participating teams get the option. You can practice at Sam Boyd with those facilities, or you could practice at Bishop Gorman High School and use theirs. They always go to Bishop Gorman High School instead of Sam Boyd to practice.
Yeah, that's that. And on the plus side too, Dave, before we'll get to some games here, but what does this mean for UNLV? I mean, their football program, it's a benefit because, you know, no one really cares about a football program. Sanchez doing a nice job. I think they're going in the right direction. But as a whole, UNLV's always been a basketball school. So the football team, they'll get to play in a new football stadium. That's good. That helps UNLV football. I don't know, Dave, as far as UNLV basketball is concerned, because also I wanted to ask you, let's be real now. The NBA is the big carrot. As big as the NFL is, Vegas is a basketball town. West Coast, I lived in Vegas, I lived in LA. They love basketball. They like football, but they love basketball. And to me, it's only a matter of time now before the Major League Baseball and the NBA go to Vegas, too. And that'll just, what about Vegas basketball, like UNLV? I think they're in big trouble, Dave.
UNLV got in trouble, of course, about 5 or 6 years ago when their conference sold their television rights to the CBS, you know, sports network.
Yeah.
And when you're not on ESPN, forget it. And so the entire conference, in fact, fell down to where I don't even know if we had a single NBA player in the conference this year. That's how bad it was. UNLV football power rating goes up 2 points because there will be a different feel in the community. Because again, Sam Boyd sits on the outskirts. You don't even feel it or sense it. But here's the UNLV problem. Even when they're going good, they would expect to fill about half of that stadium. That's all. So it's like it's a great stadium, but it's not going to show well on television for their games. We will never be selling 50 and 60,000 seats for college football here. I don't know about the NBA at this stage because the NBA may be more thinking of contracting rather than expanding teams in the cycle ahead. Probably have, and of course, a lot of your listeners in your area will relate to. We got a hockey team that's going to be the hardest of all for this community to support.
Yeah, and Foley didn't hide his disdain for the fact that $750 million was spent on the Raiders. So, Dave, let's talk some basketball. NIT, Georgia Tech, and TCU. Interesting. Two pretty high-profile coaches in their first year with their respective programs, bringing these teams to the NIT finals in Passner and Dixon. They have to be happy. Both ADs have to be happy with the hires.
Yeah, and think about this one if you want to have some fun with this final tomorrow. Jamie Dixon has never coached a New York team of any kind. He has more wins in Madison Square Garden than Jeff Hornacek. You know, Pittsburgh has done so well in the Big East tournaments in the past. And Dixon did all of this right in terms of he brought the TCU kids up earlier than usual for this game. His sister had been the women's coach at the military academy at West Point long ago before she died way too young. He took his players over to West Point on Sunday. They've done all these different team bonding things. It's good things going on at TCU. Difficulty people have had is matching up to the Georgia Tech defense. Georgia Tech number 6 in the nation in defense this year. And to put that in perspective, Gonzaga, South Carolina are 1-2. Florida, which just got eliminated Sunday, they were number 5. So Georgia Tech has been right there defensively, but Dixon is a good tactical offensive coach. If anybody's going to figure Tech out on one prep day, Dixon's got a shot.
And what's interesting, though, is Dixon's the 3.5-point favorite.
I thought it might have even come 4.
Really? I thought it would be lower, actually. I was surprised. I thought we were looking at another 2 or 1 type of deal, but people are buying in. And don't forget TCU, they did beat Kansas 2 weeks ago, too.
Yeah, I mean, TCU got so well tested in the Big 12 this year. And that's when you get your chance to develop and to grow. And I think that made a big difference for them. All of that tough competition. If you got a chance to ask Dixon right now, how much did your team develop this year? You might say, you know what? We got 2 seasons worth in 1 year because the schedule pushed us.
So let's hit South Carolina and Gonzaga right now. I talked a little bit about this with Mark Lawrence earlier. Veteran coaches, guys that have been around a long time, both guys. We got 3 coaches making their Final Four debut, but all veteran coaches. Mark Few's knocked on the door a couple of times, finally gets here. And then this is the deepest run in Frank Martin's career.
Been a fabulous run because Martin's got his kids to play so hard. But now I think it gets difficult for South Carolina in that when they're not creating havoc with their defense, when they're not forcing turnovers, they struggle to score. And Gonzaga is brutal to score against in the half court. I said they're number 1 in the nation in defense for a reason, and that's adjusted defense. So the schedule's built in. They have so much size, and it's the right kind of size. They've got big bodies inside. So when South Carolina doesn't get into the open court, they've got a tough time scoring in their half court sets. What Gonzaga had struggled with a little bit down the stretch is they were bothered by pressure because the conference they're in doesn't have pressing defenses. Now, though, it's a little different story. You've got to prep against West Virginia, which is the ideal way to prepare for South Carolina, is practice a few days for West Virginia, go up against their presses. Now, with more time to prepare, I think the Gonzaga kids will be ready for the South Carolina defense. I think they'll take care of the ball. And as long as they do that, they grind away here. If they just don't turn it over too many times, South Carolina's got a tough time scoring.
We got the Ducks and the Heels, Dave. And, you know, I'm interested. What's your take on the Heels? And I look at them, and you can't say that they're heartless because they were in the championship game last year, and they lost at the buzzer, and here they are right now. So they're a focused team. I don't know. Sometimes they seem a little soft, or they're not playing as hard as they could. You know, they seem a little, you know, they're not pushing it as hard as they can at times. I remember watching them against the Hurricanes this year in Miami. They just didn't seem to want it all that much. But to me, they're the most talented team, aren't they, Dave? And they're so tall, and they rebound so well, and they're so deep. And, you know, they lost in the championship game last year, and they really do seem to be motivated and driven by last year's disappointment.
But you know what we tend to see in North Carolina is you see a little bit of Roy Williams in the team on the court. Roy recruits good kids. Even Tyler Hansbrough, who's really about the last North Carolina player who will go in and throw the elbows around.
Yeah.
Hansbrough was a good kid. You know, he just played really hard. What Williams hasn't done is he hasn't mixed in the enforcers.
Good point.
You know, those types. So he's got a lot of nice kids. His front court, Kennedy Meeks, has all the size in the world. He's a nice kid.
Yeah.
He wins, you know, rebounds better, more on technique than pushing people around. But think about this battle inside, though, because we talked on the show earlier in the month about Oregon losing Chris Boucher. That wasn't going to matter against Rhode Island because they don't have an inside game. Wasn't going to matter against Michigan. They don't have much inside. Wasn't going to matter against Kansas.
Yeah.
Here's where it matters, because Jordan Bell is basically by himself. Bell's a very, very good player, but he has no fouls to give. And that's one of the things you always want to think about in terms of depth. If you're a shot blocker, which he is, and you can't afford to give any fouls, boy, that curtails your game, and I think it's that lack of depth that's going to hang Oregon up.
Great point. We got to get out of here in a minute, Dave. The future odds, North Carolina plus 125, Gonzaga plus 155, Ducks plus 475, and South Carolina plus 750. Those are the futures right now.
Yeah, here's what we can give people a little bit of a tip on. If you like any of those four teams to win it all, usually you will do better to bet them twice on the money line than to take them on the futures. There's less vigor is taken out. If you like North Carolina, bet them on the money line for Saturday.
Now roll
if
it
they
over.
Win, roll it over, and it will pay better.
Yeah. Word advice from the professor in Las Vegas at Nevada. That's why I call him the professor. Dave Malinsky, pregame PhD. You can follow him on Twitter. You can read his column, his daily column over at pregame. It's great stuff. And he interacts with people as well if you got a question for Dave. Dave, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the time. We'll talk some baseball next week.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
There's Dave Malinsky with us. All right. I just realized I didn't get Dave's overall winner, but we'll pick his brain. That's next Monday only. All right. So we'll come back with our plays of the day. No DraftKings lineup, but I got a bunch of bets for you. All right, it's time for our plays of the day, and we're reaching on this one, guys. So please, don't put $500 or $1,000 on this unless you're extremely rich and you don't care about money. Because we're literally, remember in the old school days, I used to have the drunken Brit dart pick of the night, the camp. It's pretty much it here. This is lowbrow stuff, but we're going with UMBC, man, a little Maryland-Baltimore County action. Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and UMBC should be a higher scoring game. We're going to go over 157.5. We're getting 3 points with Furman. Furman. We're taking Furman here against St. Peter's. This one I do like a lot. I like Wyoming. They're -8.5, a little bit high, but we saw Coastal Carolina win by 10 on their home court. Of course, it's like a playoff series, finals, championship series, CBI. I think Wyoming win by double digits, and I think it's a high-scoring game as well. They got into the 170s the other night. I think it goes over 156.5. All right, NBA basketball. I'm going to ride the Heat. Taking the Miami Heat, -3.5. Mavericks and Pelicans, totals 200. Feels just a little bit low to me. Golden State Warriors have only been underdogs 3 times this year. I'm going to take the Warriors. I know they played last night, and I'm an idiot. I bet against them. Give me the 4.5 with the Warriors. And NHL hockey, battle of heavyweights tonight. Give me the Pittsburgh Penguins, -135. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.